stupid.
This sucks.
Dude, people are drinking the Kool-Aid.
One of these days, he's going to be in a good mood. This ain't one of them.
Shut up.
Here's Bob McCowan on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
All right, it's McRadio. It's the roundtable for Friday, November the 12th, 2010. The gang has gathered to address the issues of the day. To my left, Stephen Brunt, of course. Across the table, James Deacon. And to my right,
ta-da,
Rich Kidd. He is the 2010 World Series of Poker champion. Holy crap. Jonathan Duhamel. Congratulations. Way to go. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Yeah. For those that weren't here. No, Brent, you weren't here the day Jonathan
came. No, I was not.
The World Series of Poker, now, they play the, well, everything down to the final table in the summertime, and then break, and then come back in November to play the final table. And Jonathan was here between the two, and we knew he was at the final table, and you were the chip leader going into the final table.
Yeah, I was chip leader then, yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. It could have gone badly, and almost did.
It started pretty badly, actually, yeah. I was pretty down in chips. I lost almost like half of my stack at the very beginning of the game. So.
And you were you in all in more than once? Or I know one time for sure.
During the final table, only once.
Just the one time?
Yeah, just one time.
And managed to survive that.
Yeah, doubled up with a coin flip. So.
Yeah.
Always nice.
And battled his way back, then managed to get a big lead near the end. When it got down to two, you had an overwhelming lead.
Yeah, 6-1 chip lead, yeah.
And so let's talk a little bit about your strategy at that point. Did you want to get him? You were in a lot of hands.
Yeah, I'm always in a lot of hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's your style, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to see a flop as often as you possibly can.
Yeah, or just like steal the pot pre-flop, or like, yeah. I just like to steal the pot wherever where the action is, right?
Okay, so now what's your philosophy? Now you've got this huge chip lead over this guy, 6-1 in chips. It's just the two of you. Do you want him in as often as possible?
Well, the thing is, I wasn't like to gamble a lot. I knew his game was to like see a lot of flops and try to play, you know, small ball poker to see small pots and try to play on the flop. But as for me, I like to gamble a lot, so I kind of knew that. So I just tried to steal his blind as much as I could, try to balance a little bit also with you know, playing small pot me also. And then at the end, I was just, you know, I was very fortunate to pick up a hand at some point, raise them all in because it was getting very short in chips, and he ended up calling with the worst hand.
Now, when we see it on TV, it's edited down into a two-hour show. How many hands did you play against one-on-one with him?
The one-on-one, I think it was 46 hands, so like an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe.
Wow. And were there no swings of any tangible nature?
Not really. Yeah, he went down a little bit and then he doubled up, but still, I mean, he was still short in chips. And then I just grinded out like very like small putts that I won most of the time. I won, I think, 75% of the hands while heads up.
Now you had a real entourage of people rooting for you. Most of them in Montreal Canadiens uniforms.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw that, but how many people did you have down?
I don't know exactly. It was like 150, 200 person that
Holy
were
man.
There. Like most of them had the Montreal Canadiens jersey.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah.
So and as soon as I was winning a hand, I was hearing ole, ole,
ole. Ole.
So
yeah.
That was nice. That was very nice.
Does that what did that mean to you to have a rooting section? Were you nervous?
Well, I was nervous at the beginning, but after a while, you get comfortable on the table.
Yeah.
You just play a game. But, I mean, they helped me a lot. They support me a lot. I was happy to have them. You know, at the very beginning, when I lost, like, half of my chips, they were there for me. They cheered me up and stuff. Hey, you're still in. Come on.
Yeah.
And I just, like, tried to play as best as I could. And,
yeah. Yeah. How, the entire final table, how long did it take?
I think the first day was, like, 14 hours. 13 or 14 hours, yeah.
And then a second day?
The second day was like 2 hours, the heads-up play.
Oh, and the second day, so you broke when you got down to two?
Yeah, then we stopped playing. We had a 1 day off to do, you know, press conference and stuff like that, and
then
we played the other day, yeah.
Now, I'm also told that you had quite a party afterwards.
Well, yeah.
I
mean,
Did you buy?
Yeah. Well, it was...
Well, didn't you get the biggest suite in the hotel?
Yeah, they really paid us, like, the biggest suite in the hotel and, like, free food, free drink for everybody. So, and we're all Quebecers, so it was kind of a good party.
did they get you Canadian beer, though?
Well, we didn't drink much beer. It was more like a champagne and stuff like that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty nice, though, to see, like, you know, all the family, my grandparents were there, my sister, all my close friends, to see them back a little bit and just, you know, the depression's off now, just to relax a little bit.
Oh, that was fantastic. So now they give you, I assume they give you a check. Do they give you a check, or do they send you the money? Or
well, it's whatever you want. I think the best option is to give you a check, but yeah.
And did you take, so you took a check?
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to go back to Vegas to take it, though, because I don't have it yet with me.
Oh, you left it there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're planning on going back, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
It's a good reason to go back, though.
Yeah. They want you to come back and spend it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, leave it in the cage. We'll look after it for you. Would you like it in chips, Jonathan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or dollar coins. So now, you got to pay tax on this money. Do you pay tax in the U.S. too, as well as Canada?
Yeah, you got to pay 30% because you can't eat him.
Now, you know there's a couple of companies out there that tell you we can get that money back for you.
Yeah.
You're going to call them?
Yeah, I have a team with that. I mean, I have a team that takes care of that. I mean, I don't want to think too much about that. I'm just a poker player, so.
What are you going to do with the money?
I'm going to do a lot of things. First thing, I'm giving, as soon as I get back to Montreal, I'm giving a check of $100,000 to the Montreal Canadian Child Foundation.
Beautiful.
Yep. And then after that, I don't know yet. I'm going to be traveling a lot to play a lot of those big tournaments. There's a lot coming in the next few years. There's a Poker Stars European Poker Tour and the Poker Stars North American Poker Tour. So those are like the biggest tournaments in the world. So I'll be definitely be playing all of those and, you know, try to make another big score.
There's entry fees for those tournaments. So now you're comfortable now for at least a while.
Yeah. For a while I am, yeah.
Do you play many? You play a lot online, right?
Yeah, I play mostly online, yeah.
Have you played in a lot of cash games?
Mostly I play a cash game online on PokerStars.
But what about live cash games?
I play a little bit, but not that much. This summer I was only playing tournaments, though.
And do you plan to move to Vegas?
Not move there. I'm going to go there a couple of times, but I want to stay in Montreal.
Is there a danger here? I mean, it's $9 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of 10,000 entry fees.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's in cash games with the kinds of games that are out there. You know, not that $9 million you can go through in a big hurry, but, you know, you can go through a lot of money in a big hurry. How do you pace yourself? How do you plan your life?
Well, yeah, it's all depend on what you want to play. You're not forced to play those big games. I mean, for me, I'm going to play a little higher than I used to play, but not that much, though. I still play the same little guy from Montreal with my same little friends and stuff like that, so I don't change that much. I'm going to play like the bigger tournaments, but in cash games, though, I'm not sure I'm going to play that high.
Yeah, but you're not going to play $2, you know, pot limit.
No, that's for sure. But, I mean, I don't want to play like $1 million a game or $100,000 a game, that's for sure.
Well, no, I mean, one of the games, Daniel Negreanu is a good friend of mine. He's been on this program on a number of occasions. And Daniel actually helped you out a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, I saw him in London like a month ago. He helped me a lot with most of like the mindset you need to have when going to the final table and stuff like that. So he really helped me out a lot.
But I know that in conversations I've had with Daniel, I mean, they play like $10,000, $20,000, and I don't mean $10, $20, $10,000, $20,000.
Yeah, they play very big. Yeah.
Big numbers.
Yeah, very big money, yeah.
You know, does that appeal to you?
Well, I'm not used to play that big amount. I mean, I'm going to be playing a little higher, but not that high, though. Okay. This is very, very high.
Oh, yeah. Questions for the guys?
I just wanted to say, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, the pot and buying your way into these things. I read somewhere that you had won a total of about $100,000 prior to this tournament, and it was a $10,000 buy-in for this tournament. That must have seemed like a lot of money to you at the time, a big risk.
Well, yeah, it is, but at the same time, it's like the worst series of poker, so it's like the bigger tournament in the world. It's the most prestigious one, so it's definitely the one you want to be playing in. You're like playing against the biggest poker players in the world, so it's kind of nice to just, you know, be there, try to do your best, and, you know, whatever happens, you have a very good experience, and you learn from that. So for me, it was just about playing the best I can.
So you weren't worried about the $10,000, but what about the culture around it and all the hype and all the stuff around it that would have been different than the kind of tournaments you played before?
It's very big. It's like, as I said, the biggest tournament in the world. So there's like camera everywhere.
Were you comfortable with that?
At the very beginning, it's you're a little nervous, but then after a while, you play 10, 15 minutes, and then you start forgetting about the cameras, and the only thing you're thinking is like the game itself. So,
What else happens when you win the World Series in terms of sponsorships and stuff? And I assume a bunch of other things fall into place.
Well, yeah, like I'm going to have a deal with PokerStars.net.
Sure.
It's going to help me out a lot for like all of those big tournaments that are coming. And then after that, I mean, they're taking care of me. So it's, in a way, it's a lot better than there's a $9 million, but then after that, it's like all the other opportunities that comes to you. So it's pretty nice because of that.
With Jonathan Duhamel, the 2010 World Series of Poker champion. just crowned earlier this week. So you're at the table. There's nine guys at the table. Most of the guys at the table I was not familiar with. I don't deny that you don't get to that point without having some skill and some talent and a little bit of luck, too. But the one guy that's at the table that has a real reputation was Michael Mizrahi.
Yep.
How did you had to be conscious of him being there? Did you have a strategy to play differently if he's in a hand, if he's not? What were your thoughts there?
Well, yeah, because he's like one of the best players in the world, that's for sure. And thing is, also, he was on my left. So in poker, when the guy's on your left, he has position.
He's behind you.
It's a very, very, very big thing. But he was short in chips, though, at the very beginning of the final table. So I wasn't too worried because of that. For me, it was just, I don't want him to double up, and I'll be okay.
But he ultimately got the lead in chips.
He like tripled up, or even more than that. So I was very worried. I didn't want to play too much against him because he's a very, very good poker player. So, you know, it just you try to avoid him a little. And, you know, whenever you're in a hand with him, you got to concentrate a lot and very, like, try to make no mistakes at all.
So if you raise a pot and he comes back and re-raises again, are you less likely to call? Well, if it's Michael Mizrahi, or do you think he's trying to bully the table?
It depends on the strategy. He wasn't playing too aggressively when he was short in chips. When he got that chip lead, though, he was playing a lot of hands and tried to abuse from that chip lead that he had. So I had to be very careful about that. So for me, it was more about I'm going to put the pressure pre-flop, you know, to try to. I don't want to see like a hand, a flop out of position against him. But I was putting a lot of money pre-flop. Either I follow or I re-raise him. I'm like never going to call him and play out of position against him.
We only got a couple of minutes here before we move on to other things. So tell me what it's like leaving the Rio, leaving Vegas, walking around in Vegas after you win the World Series. I mean, a completely different perspective, environment. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, you're a superstar in the sport.
Yeah, it's quite crazy. I mean, everybody recognizes you. Everybody want to shake your hand, have an autograph and stuff like that. So it's kind of special. I had to have my buddies with me, you know, because sometimes people they try to get like very close of you and stuff like that. So, but it's, you know, it's different. It's kind of a new thing for me, but I enjoy it so far. It's a good feeling.
Anything else, guys?
Yeah, the one thing I was interested in, you were studying for a finance degree at one point, and I read that mathematics and probability are a big part of your style. You've talked a lot about, you know, how you play different people, but how much of it is in your head and in actual probability?
Well, it's always in your head. It's something you got to masterize. I think when you're at that level and you play with the best guy in the world, you always have to think with that mathematical thing and probabilities and all those stuff. But it's almost become natural for you. I mean, if it's not natural for you, you're not like good enough to play with the best in the world.
But you've read a lot about it. You've read a lot of strategy.
Yeah, I read a lot of books.
So you recognize it when you see
read all of those books, see a lot of poker videos, and then again, you got to practice a lot. I mean, I've been playing a lot online on poker shows. I play up to like 10 tables at a time. So I mean, that way you get a lot of practice, and I mean, that's the way if you want to become one of the best. Hmm.
Did you sit at the table with anybody over the course of the many days leading up to it? Big name guys that you'd never sat with before, never met before?
During the main event, I played with Johnny Chan, which is like one of the biggest ones.
Two-time world.
Yeah.
Back-to-back.
Yeah, back-to-back, and I think it was
80-89?
Yeah, I think.
Or maybe 89-90?
Yeah, one of the two.
One of the two.
And during the main event, that was about it. I played with Scotty Nguyen, also Scotty Nguyen.
Oh, Scotty Nguyen.
Scotty baby, yeah. That was quite nice. But during the first tournaments, I played with, Phil Ivey, Tom Duane, all of those young guns. I played with almost all of them. So it's quite amazing to play with them.
I got a feeling you're going to be playing a lot more with them.
Yeah, I think so.
And
cool.
There's, they have their own little group, and I think you got a chance to be in that group. By the way, do you play golf?
Yeah, I do. I'm not that good, but I do play golf.
You know, they all play golf.
Yeah, I know.
They're crazy golfers,
too. I have
to
practice a little bit, but I mean...
Not necessarily.
A different kind of betting.
Yeah.
It's different, but it ain't cheap playing with those guys.
Yes. Yeah.
And I got news for you. They ain't that good.
That's nice, though. Maybe I have a chance.
But like poker, you got, you know, get your money in at the right time, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
The World Series of Poker Champion for 2010. It's a thrill to have Jonathan Duhamel back in the studio. The roundtable will continue. We'll switch gears. Talk a little bit about one of Jonathan's loves, too. The Montreal Canadiens. How good are they? The Toronto Maple Leafs. How bad are they? That's when primetime continues on The Fan and Rogers Sportsnet.
Sports Central with Zach Cooper. Tonight at 10. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590.
If you're watching on television, there is the famous World Series of Poker bracelet that everybody talks about.
Beautifully displayed on
Bob's lunch bag.
Yeah, Bob's lunch bag. No, you're packing your own lunch. That's good, Bob.
Yeah, Allie packs a lunch for him.
You economizing these days or what? That's good to see.
It ain't mine. I don't know whose it is.
Yeah.
But we had to find something in black so that you could actually see it. Gold and diamond encrusted. Would you say it's worth 40 grand?
Yeah, roughly.
That's what they said?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Want to sell it? Not yet.
Not even for like a couple of millions.
Good for you.
I'm involved with that. Yeah.
It's good when you, on these days when you're not the richest guy at the table. So this is a first in here.
Yeah.
Well.
Actually, no, Phil Lind was in earlier this week.
Yeah, that he might. Well, I'm not sure about that.
That's I am sure about that. I'm sorry.
Here's what I know. I might have been the last time Jonathan was here.
Yeah.
I might be the next time he's here. It's poker, after all. You never know.
That's why they call it gambling.
That's why I'm trying to caution him.
But not only that, but guys named Duhamel from Quebec in sports are generally known for racing motorcycles, right?
Yeah, Miguel Duhamel.
And his dad, Yvon, was like a 10-time world champion and a bunch of different things.
No relation, huh?
No.
I was going to say, yeah.
Have you been back home yet?
Yeah, I was home for 2 hours last night.
Yeah,
plane drops and I was home at 3 a.m. and then I have to get up at 5 a.m. to get back in Toronto.
Wow. Oh dear. Okay, but are you heading back later?
I think we're gonna go back tonight. I'm not sure.
Okay, and so you have time to kind of unwind for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna have like a day and a half, so very good.
We've spent a considerable amount of time. We will continue to later on the program and address the situation with the Toronto Maple Leafs, a chagrin situation.
What's going on there, Bob? Did something happen?
Well, they can't beat anybody. Nobody that they can see in the mirror, nobody they play in their squad game again, and certainly nobody that wears a different uniform from them. Getting whacked twice in Florida this week, and now they get Vancouver tomorrow night, so that looks pretty bleak. And the issue becomes, you know, what do you do about it? Because now they called up Nazem Kadri and somebody else today.
Yeah, so that'll be fine. Kevin Ollie, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure everything will be great now.
Or Keith Ollie.
I think Ollie we should just refer to as Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Well, great. Meanwhile, you're a Montreal Canadiens fan?
Yes, I am. Big time.
Have been for a long time?
Yes.
Since forever, huh?
Since forever. Oh, yeah.
How good is that team?
Very good, I think.
They're playing well. Who did they beat last night? Boston?
They beat Boston. Vancouver back-to-back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty darn impressive.
And I haven't seen a whole lot, but what I do know is that maybe the most surprising thing to me, well, I guess it's not surprising if they're winning, but Carey Price has played very well, and that's starting to look like that decision with Carey Price may have been a good one. I'd have bet against that one. Yeah. Did you think that Price was the guy?
Well, I was okay with the decision because I know he's so young and stuff. So, I mean, he has a lot in front of him. He is too young, 2 years younger than Halak was. So,
yeah, but how do you disregard what Halak did for you guys?
I know. He did so much last year. I know that. But
and he's done well in St. Louis. So, both teams, it's...
Well, he got Sheldon his last start.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Pardon me.
The Columbus has beat him 8-1.
Yeah, he gave up, what, 5 of those, I think? That was just the dam breaking. He has played very well. But things have settled down in Montreal. That's the main thing is that he had to get through that first stretch to take the heat off a little bit.
But he handled the pressure so well.
And he did handle it very well this year. He's still got to win he's still got to do something for them in the playoffs for everybody to back off.
Well, the perception, let's be honest, the perception of the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, they barely made it into the postseason, and then they had this great run, and the perception was they really aren't a very good hockey team, but Halak stood on his head. I mean, to be honest, that's the way most people, I think, looked at the run last year. So now they come out of the gate, they're playing pretty well this year, a positive record, Price is playing well. Is this actually an improving team, a team that one might expect could have a similar run again this year, Brent?
Well, who do you love in the East right now? You got to talk about the alternatives. And aside from, you know, Washington, who are probably overdue, Pittsburgh has struggled and haven't got any goaltending. Boston's played well. Tim Thomas has played great. But it is in a wide, wide open East right now. You know, Montreal is a well-coached team. You know, Jacques Martin, people don't always love the way his teams play, but they are a well-coached team. They have potentially a very good goaltender. And you know, I think quietly they're kind of middle of the playoff pack team that could do something in the postseason. I would say right now,
and certainly says a lot about what you might imagine the culture of the dressing room to be when Brian Gionta is named captain. an American, a guy who's relatively new to the franchise, but, you know, a real character guy, a terrific guy on, you know, who sets a great example on the ice, plays a really tough game for a small guy. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that really set the tone for the year.
Do Francophones care if an Anglophone is the captain of the Montreal Canadiens?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
you don't really?
For us, I mean, we want to have, like, the best captain. That's it. And we know that they speak English in the lockers anyway, so, I mean, we don't mind if it's an Anglophone, Francophone.
Yeah. Although, like, well, maybe it's just the press that whips it up then. Because with Saku, obviously, there was that long-running thing with Saku Koivu about how he didn't speak French.
And yeah, now this year, Brian Gionta, like at the first game, he spoke in French in front of everybody. So everybody was like, wow, this is nice. This is good stuff.
He did a lot of work in the offseason.
I think as long as they win, they don't care. I think as long as the team's winning, you can speak any language you want.
Well, and I mean, look, at experiences for us walking down the street are totally different from experiences as a high-profile hockey player in Montreal. But I don't, you know, you've been there more times than I have, but I've been to Montreal plenty of times. And my response is, if you make an effort to speak French, people tend to appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Even if, like, your accent is not good or anything, as long as we see that you make an effort, I mean, we realize that, so for us, it's good.
Yeah, so Gionta is trying. He's making an effort.
He's doing great.
And that's all you expect,
right?
He's
doing very great, so we're all happy about that.
And so is the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, if we go across the country, Ottawa's playing a little bit better. They seem to have recovered from that horrible beginning.
They're out of their funk a bit now.
They're out of their funk. What do we expect of them?
Well,
are they a middle of the pack team too?
I think that they're a seventh or eighth team, maybe a ninth or tenth team still. I'm not totally convinced about them, but they are playing a lot better.
Their best player is starting to play better.
That's right.
A little bit anyway.
Spezza, yeah.
Jason Spezza.
Calgary and Edmonton. Edmonton not playing that well, but still a very young team, and maybe a dramatic improvement would the expectations of that would be premature.
This year, that's a very long term rebuilding process with some great young players in place already, and they'll probably be drafting high again next year or this year. So,
it's a good bet they're going to be better at the end of the season than they are.
Absolutely,
right now.
That puts them in a different place than some franchises in this country.
Calgary, meanwhile, snaps a losing streak the other night, but nonetheless, they are a disappointment in Calgary, and a surprising disappointment.
I'd be willing to bet that the talk shows in Calgary concentrate more on how bad their franchise is than how the Leafs are, right? That's my guess.
I'm thinking that you may be true.
And that this has to be the last hurrah for the Sutter Inc.
Yes, I would say that's true as well.
That's the only thing.
Or as they were referred to the other day, the Sutterites.
Yeah, no, I think that there's an obvious place to point fingers there. Right. It is, it has been a very bad stretch. And I think we're at the end of the road for the. Nearing the end of the road for the Sutters.
I mean, I think I know the obvious answer to this, but and we sort of addressed this jokingly the other day, but if you were the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Calgary Flames called you and said, we'll trade you all of our guys for all of your guys, given that the Toronto Maple Leafs have fleeced Calgary at least a couple times in trades.
Well, a long time ago. Do you think they fleeced them on? I'm not sure they fleeced them on the Dion Phaneuf trade because the guys they got back aren't that great either.
I think
Phaneuf's 25. I still think that's not a bad deal for the Leafs.
No, I think it's a pretty good deal for the Leafs. That's what I mean.
Are you talking about Doug Gilmore days?
Oh, the Gilmore deal was a fleece.
Yes, that was a long time ago, though.
So, would you make that deal?
Well, for one thing, you get Jerome
Gamelin. You got to think about it now.
You get the best player
in the two teams.
Who's
got, what, two goals this year?
Yeah, but he's still, I don't think Jerome's done.
I do believe Toronto has a lot of potential, though. A lot more than Calgary does.
It's interesting.
Well, you might get some people in Toronto to disagree with you based on their performance over the last 11 games.
But one thing that Brian Burke has done with the Leafs is he's brought in guys who are faster, who can play the game, the new so-called new NHL game, better than the bunch that were sent packing.
Aside from the scoring part.
Yeah, but they're lacking in the scoring, but at least they can skate. The issue is that they've gotten older and slower on defense. I don't know how that's possible, but that's what they've done.
Would you make the deal?
Yeah, that's a good question.
But which team do you like?
I don't like either of them a whole lot now.
Well, no, but going forward, is there a greater upside in the Toronto Maple Leafs than there is in the Calgary Flames?
No, I don't think so.
And there isn't much of an upside you already acknowledge in the Calgary Flames.
Not a huge one, but I can't. I would have a hard time making
a case
for
a poker player, I'd pass.
Fold. Yeah. I'd fold on that's for sure.
Can I have the Canucks?
Well, let's go. Exactly. That's the last. That's the last stand here. And once again, the concession would be that the Vancouver Canucks are the best Canadian franchise in the National Hockey League, with the most immediate upside. But again, it's not. It hasn't exactly been smooth sailing all the way this year. There are still issues. They're not. They're in the midst of an East Coast swing, and those are never easy. Mm-hmm. What do we think of them?
I think they're going to win the West when all is said and done. I know LA is playing great right now, and Detroit has played very, very well, but I think Vancouver is going to win the West. I think they may well win the
Stanley Cup. You think they're good enough?
Yep. And it sets up well for them that they are having this big East Coast road swing at the beginning of the season when they're still fresh, because when they have them in January, it just wrecks the franchise. You know, there are so many years that the Canucks historically would be doing pretty well, and then they'd have that after Christmas break East Coast swing that would just, you know, they'd be crushed by it and never contend after that.
I mean, am I reading the tea leaves correctly here that we could see? Here we are in the first week of November. I'm going to talk about the Stanley Cup final, but I mean, is it even possible a Vancouver Montreal Stanley Cup? An all Canadian Stanley
Cup?
It's
possible. I don't like Montreal's chances in the East as much as like Vancouver's chances in the West.
Yeah, but you already said that Montreal, you know, I mean, look at.
No,
the East is open.
The East is open. Yeah, I think Washington's going to be there, and I think Boston might be there too. I think they're, you know, they say the team that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment built. They're looking
exactly.
Great right now.
They've done such a fine job.
Can't say they don't build teams. They built that one.
But last year, the Jacques Martin system proved to work in the playoffs for the Canadiens. So if Carey Price does what he'll act did last year, there's no reason
why. They got a
shot.
Why. Yep.
Yeah. Changes in the game. A few tweaks by the not really very many, but by the general managers. And yet we continue to address issues in the game of hockey. We'll talk about that, where we're going, where we should be going, when the roundtable continues. You're listening to Primetime Sports on The Fan and Rogers Sportsnet.
Toronto Raptors basketball. The Raptors versus the Magic. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590.
Team before the hour. Friday, November the 12th, 2010, the roundtable is assembled here on Primetime, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. Here's truly Bob McCown with Stephen Brunt, James Deacon, and the World Series of Poker champion for 2010, Jonathan Duhamel. All right, change gears. Forget the hockey rules and stuff. Enough of that. There really wasn't anything exciting there. Let's address an ongoing and in some ways still developing story. That's Chris Bosch, the ex-Toronto Raptor, now with the Miami Heat. I don't know how many of you, did you watch any of the game last night?
Boston? Yes, I did.
And I thought it was interesting because there was the TBS coverage and Sir Charles, was on and said Miami would kill Boston last night. That they turn up the heat, they could do it anytime they want to, payback for the opening night, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, Boston jumps out to a 12-15 point, I think they stretched it to 20 at one point during the game, lead. We're in total control the entire night. And I hate to say I told you so, but the juggernaut that is Miami, they're going to have to figure out a way for all these guys to play together, because right now they're not.
Yeah, but they did play together in the Olympic team. And it's early, and Boston is a team, and those guys play incredibly well together, and they won a championship together. So it's early. But
this Miami team is, what, 5-4 now, I think?
Yeah, but it's early days. We'll have this conversation again in the spring.
They're going to be better at the end of the season than they are now, too. But it must be a bit humiliating for them when the things that usually come easily to all those guys individually are not coming easily to them with the Heat.
Yeah, no, it is. There's an adjustment. There are a lot of adjustments, not just a playing adjustment, but ego adjustments and all kinds of things. And
I don't know if you happen to see, but they at some point in the game they add video from inside the dressing room at halftime where, you know, the Heat coach is just basically saying to these guys, can you park your egos so we can play as a team and actually get this thing done?
Soon well, be the ex-coach,
but that
by the way.
Was my yes. point yeah. at the beginning of the season, is this notion that you can take three superstars from three different teams, put them on one team, and suddenly expect them to be dominant is at least slightly presumptuous.
Yeah.
If one looks at teams that have been successful in the NBA that have had three, and most teams that have been successful have had two or three star players, they developed them. They weren't stars elsewhere. They either became stars when they arrived on the scene and fit in, or they were developed by that organization and became stars. You know, whether it's the Lakers under Riley back in the 80s, whether it was the Celtics of a similar generation, and we know they had three stars. Even Michael Jordan with Scottie Pippen, and to maybe a lesser extent.
Well, there wasn't really another star on that team.
I guess
it was really Pippen. But, you know, Jabbar
came
from
the rebound. Who's the guy that all got all the rebounds? It was Dennis Rodman.
Bill Cartwright and Bill Wennington. And,
well, no, but
Dennis
Rodman.
But, you know, Dennis Rodman was not a star. He was a...
I guess you're right.
He was a, but, you know, Jabbar came from another team. You know, he came from Milwaukee, you know, to the great Lakers team. So they you can bring guys in. You can, and he was
a
star.
And this generation of Boston Celtics, you know, they did bring in Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, and they it made it work. But they were coming into a fairly entrenched culture with this, little did everyone know, this brilliant little a point guard who was going to turn into the fourth star on that team.
Yeah, but you see, I think the one thing in Miami, there may be a coaching issue, and I'd say that will get resolved because the most disposable guy there is the coach. But the other thing is they don't, you know, you're building in a kind of an unconventional way. You don't really have a point guard, right? Carlos Arroyo has been playing the point, I think, for him. And, you know, and Chris Bosh, people are figuring out what Chris Bosh is, which is he's not kind of classic big man. He's certainly no center. He's and they don't have that guy, right? Right now they don't have a big, you know, a banger like that, and they don't really have a point guard. So you're kind of building a team unconventionally. You've got three. The other three parts are great. I also think it's predictable that if one of those three guys was going to struggle, and if he was going to take take the heat for it, so to speak,
it was going to be
Bosh.
Well, I don't find that surprising at all. I said I think this thing has a great chance of coming unglued, and if it does come unglued, it's going to be Chris Bosh that's going to be the loose piece.
I still think they're going to be damn good, Bob. And, you know, and I defer to some, you know, basketball people who know way more about it than I do. But it is going to be one of the interesting things is going to be Chris Bosh getting through this first. Kind of trial by fire, because for all of his talk about Toronto and what it's like being in Toronto and what you can't see on TV in Toronto, and Toronto's a pretty easy place to be a basketball player, by and large. You know, people want you to succeed.
And plus,
they want you to win. They're so desperate for it to be good. Chris Bosh, really...
Well, you get a pass on a lot of stuff.
You get a pass on a ton of things.
And in a pure hardwood sense, the offense was built around him.
Yep.
So he had every opportunity to have great numbers and what have you. That said, what was interesting last night, I think it was Reggie Miller was the analyst on the broadcast, and he was surprisingly critical of all of them. Now, you know how that fraternity tends to kind of make nice with one another, you know. Except for Barkley. So I thought it was interesting that they already smell a little bit of blood in Miami, and they're ready to be critical of even of LeBron James.
Well, one of the issues, I mean, they showed Pat Riley in the crowd on numerous occasions last night. And
the future coach.
Well, that's part of the speculation, isn't it? If this doesn't go well 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, at some point in the season, is there any doubt that Pat Riley steps down to coach these guys? And while Pat Riley is credited with genius as a result of his performances with the Lakers, to some lesser extent with the New York Knicks, there are many who have opined that in the Riley days in the 80s, ostensibly nobody paid any attention to him, and that it was Magic's team and to a lesser degree Kareem's team and Worthy's team and Scott and the other guys. And the coach more or less figured out that the way for this team to succeed is for him to basically shut up and let these guys play.
But hasn't that been said about the coach of every great team in every
has been. But I didn't say this kind of stuff. I'm talking about those who were there and observed it, saying that Riley during that time period was less the genius coach and more of a babysitter. Now, maybe that was Riley's genius, that he recognized that undercoaching these guys is better than overcoaching.
Yeah.
Maybe that's true.
You know, I think Phil Jackson, I don't think got the full credit he should have received in Chicago because they treated him like he was Michael's caddy. But when he got to LA and did it again, I think that there was, you know, he's obviously got a great team there as well. But
yeah, you're not going to hear me say anything about Phil Jackson not being a great coach. I mean, maybe the greatest coach ever.
Yep.
You know, Red Auerbach was a great coach. He probably held that mantle. If you're going to talk about the guy who had the award before Jackson came along. In a completely different world, Auerbach probably would have been the guy. Now, is there any question? I mean, it's Phil Jackson.
But I think going to Riley is the obvious move here, right? Because can't do a lot player-wise. They don't have a lot of options.
And he has a perfect excuse because he took full credit for actually amassing all this talent.
That's right.
Even though it was Dwayne Wade was the general manager.
We got to take the break. When we come back, analyzing the Maple Leafs, some changes today. Is this officially panic mode? We'll address that, the Toronto-Hamilton CFL game coming up, and other issues. When Primetime Sports continues on The Fan and Sportsnet. On the markets today, the TSX closed down 185 points back to 12,749 to close out the week. Dow Jones was off 90, NASDAQ down 37. Price of gold lost $37.80 an ounce to $13.65.50. Means Jonathan's bracelet is worth a lot less than what it was yesterday. Oil declining $2.93 to $84.88 a barrel, and the Canadian dollar slid 0.09 back to $99.10. Richard Southern in studio. Chinese growth concerns has the markets bleeding red ink. Now what?
Well, this ongoing situation. The Chinese government concerned that the country's economy is growing too much, that inflation is becoming too much of a concern. So lots of rumors today that the Chinese central bank may hike interest rates over the weekend. The country, China, commodity hungry. So that's the reason why you saw oil, gold, even copper take a tumble today. And of course, the resource-heavy Toronto market followed right along. Big drop for the TSX. The index losing 176 points on the week, Bob.
A tasty way to support the Blue Jays.
Mrs. Fields has signed a deal with Major League Baseball to become the official cookie provider.
Great.
Yeah. The company will sell 12 individually wrapped cookies with team-specific logos on them for a whopping $35.99.
What?
Yeah.
For how many cookies?
For 12.
12 cookies for $35?
You got the logos on them, though. The licensed logos.
Yeah, great.
The playoff teams will be first, and then all the teams available by opening day. Get this, according to Major League Baseball, Debbie Fields, the company's founder, was actually a bat girl for the Oakland A's in the early 1970s. Now you know.
Well, she's bat crazy if she thinks I'm going to pay $35 for 12 cookies.
What do you think the Blue Jay cookie would taste like?
Middle of the pack. And now, holiday parties make sense.
End-of-year office celebrations worth the investment, according to more than half the executives polled by the creative group. 59% said it has a positive impact on their businesses. Most employees asked say they'll attend this year to socialize with colleagues, followed by the opportunity to drink free booze and consume free food. Bob, our invitations just went out. Are you coming to the office Christmas party this year?
Yes, and for only the latter two reasons.
Why? Oh, the booze.
Food and
the
booze.
Good enough reasons for me. I'll see you at the bar.
Socializing has no impact on me whatsoever. I see people every day. I don't need to see you again.
You can hang out with the executives and ask them about their parking spots.
I want to see them a lot less. The Business Report with Richard Southern of 680 News every weekday afternoon on The Fan.